Welcome to another episode of Lapide CISA Talks. Today we're joined by Lee Morton, Head of Cybersecurity at GBG PLC. With over 20 years of experience, Lee is well known for his inventive and dynamic thinking when having to work with limited budgets at short timescales. GBG helps businesses verify the identities of people and companies. This is important for many reasons, like preventing fraud, ensuring compliance with regulations, and improving the customer experience. They work with a wide range of clients across industries, including finance, retail, government, healthcare, and telecoms. Some clients include the likes of Revolut, Oxford City Council, and Currencies Direct, to name a few. Needless to say, if you found yourself verifying your identity for KYC, Know Your Customer purposes, it's likely that you've used GBG, most likely without even knowing it. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to meet you virtually.
Yes, and my understanding is you've joined GBG fairly recently in the head of cybersecurity role. How are you settling in over the last 6 months?
Yeah, it took me a little bit of time to get used to everything. I'll be honest, I walked in not understanding the products, but they have a very, very good onboarding scheme here, which meant the fact that soon I was able to start understanding what we did. Like all roles, you go into going, I've got an understanding, but you don't really understand until you walk in. And we've got so many products and so many areas we're working at. It's been a steep learning curve is probably the best way from there.
Before we get started today, guys, I just wanted to take a minute of your time just to show you something really exciting. So I'm the producer of CISO Talks and I edit all of the other content here at Lapide. I've been looking on the market for a long time now for something that isn't caffeine, isn't energy drinks, something that's more natural. And I'm quite skeptical, so the natural stuff, I'm usually don't buy into it very much until I found this. So this is Magic Mind, and it's designed to be an addition to your daily routine. It's loaded with mushroom nootropics, adaptogens, and over 100% of your daily vitamin C and D. I've been using it now for about 7 days, and I've actually noticed a massive difference. Like, I've really noticed that I can stay focused for longer periods during the day without getting distracted, procrastinating, etc. And here's a little bonus. Every bottle that's sold, 5 cents is donated to mental health charities that work with homeless communities throughout the US. And they're also 100% carbon neutral, so what's not to love, really? So if you want to boost your productivity and reduce your stress long term, then why not try Magic Mind out? So yeah, the link's in the description and use the code CISOTALKS20 down below for a discount. And let's get back to the video.
Yeah, it's always the best. And you know, you find yourself learning a lot and having to do the research. I think that's where a lot of the personal development and growth professionally also comes from. I certainly had that experience when I joined Lapide, from being an English teacher in China to suddenly finding myself in the cybersecurity space doing data-centric audits and protection. You know, it took me a while to understand what all that was about. But okay, well, it sounds like the dust has settled a little bit. But how do you kind of make sure that you hit the ground running when joining a newer organization in a cybersecurity role? And sort of what are the key areas do you focus on to try and make an immediate impact, you know, the kind of easy wins, so to speak?
Well, first of all, you've got to get to know your team. Fundamentally, I walked into this organization, I had one of my managers looking at leaving. So actually, I started a month earlier than I should have been. And when I started in the organization, I focused on trying to make sure that that person was willing to stay. And luckily he did. So that was a great thing. So obviously you got to make sure you understand your team, make sure that you're not going in and making massive waves. You've also got to look at what has occurred before you, how you got into that position, and why the previous person has moved on from the organization. So you, first of all, you don't make the mistakes, but also learn from what they've done.
Yeah.
And then from that point, you focus on what you can change very quickly. As you say, back to that point, you want to be able to demonstrate that you're doing things, but also want to make sure that you're not going in and making drastic waves. So for me, understand what's going on and look for something you can implement that would make a quick change without knocking down walls. So I've come in and brought in solutions that were missing more than anything else, or areas that we were running towards of at the end of a contract, it's probably best for us to come there. So if we resolve those contracts, we would have lost those kind of capabilities, made sure those were fixed. But then it's changing hearts and minds and making sure that security is seen as being a entity that everybody wants to talk to. So I've been putting on lots of things lately that are non-techie, that are more the social side. Make sure that that security is seen as being somebody everybody can talk to. Because once you've got hearts and minds, people will talk to you. And people will come and see you and say, oh, actually, if you need to do that, that then changes the way you can do things and how fast you can implement things. So for me, get out there and speak to people is the biggest thing you can do. So talk to people first, and then people come to you and say, I need your help with this. That then starts making changes. That then starts, people start seeing security as being an enabler and moving things forward.
Yeah, I mean, definitely communication is key. And, you know, you made a point about getting to know your team and having that kind of buy-in and, you know, also just the rapport building and likability. So, you know, you feel like you can talk to each other when there is an issue. And certainly, you know, the IT people are usually the ones that you go to when things are broken. But we want to get away from that.
The thing is that also the security has its reputation of being security team says no. And if we're not out and speaking to people early, we'll still have that situation because realistically, we need to implement things to suit, you know, it could be a compliance reason or something, our expectations from the business or best practice. And if we only joined in at the end, then it's more likely to say no. Whereas I don't know any security person like saying no. What we want to do is say, actually, if we go this way, it's better. So getting out there and speaking to people and getting yourself known is more important than anything else, because then people will come to you and talk to you early instead of wait to the end.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, what we've actually done this in the last few weeks, we actually did an internal cybersecurity day where we actually invited everybody in. We give out talks. My guys who had never done talks before was just giving talks regarding our technology, how we can assist the business, and then putting prizes in. Mm-hmm. So we had prizes for, we did a couple of Capture the Flag tournaments. We had people asking questions. If the people asked the best questions, they got prizes, that kind of stuff. And being out there, so people knew our name. And that has broken down all the doors. And I've got people coming to me and saying, Isley, can I speak to you about this? And that is a bigger window. No matter what technology we're bringing, that's not going to help us as much as being there at the start of the conversation.
Definitely is to make yourself accessible. And like you said, I really like that word being, you know, an enabler rather than just kind of fixing things when they're broken. Actually, I did see your post about your cybersecurity day with all the free goodies and giveaways. Looked like a little mini trade show stand, you know, when people just come in and grab things. Although Lapide was missing from the stash pile.
Yeah.
So maybe, do get in touch next time.
Maybe Cyber Day 2 will get it. We actually have other people who have sent stuff in, and there's actually been more boxes been arriving since. So they've already been stored away now for Cyber Day 2.
For free stationery is always good, isn't it?
Well, we've decided we're going to do it every 6 months now. So we will have this as a constant thing. But what we'll do is we'll bring in other members of the team and also people from outside cyber who can come and talk about how they interact with cyber. And then, again, it breaks down barriers.
Yeah, and I mean, the landscape is changing so quickly, so often. I mean, you know, I want to save the sort of co-pilot AI piece for a little bit later in this talk, but certainly, yeah, you want to keep people well informed of, you know, maybe even just changes that are going to be taking place in the near foreseeable future. But in terms of the going back to sort of the tech side, you said that about the filling the gaps when you're coming into the role, those kind of quick and easy wins when contracts are running out. You don't want to sort of fix things for or change things for changing things' sake.
Right.
And obviously, when things are nearing the end of their licenses, is typically when you want to be reviewing them. What is your kind of process for going about that? Is it just sort of a Google search and seeing who the vendors are for a particular tool?
No, I go out to as many events as I can do. And what I actually say to my team to go, realistically, go to tech shows. So obviously I go to all the regular ones that are nearby. But also, I ensure that I go out to any of the local kind of events. So we, I live in the north of England, so in the city near us, we do. Yeah. I wonder why you thought. Well, the accent doesn't mean I live there. You don't change accent that quick. But it's like, I say to my guys, get out and go out to these events. Even if it's small events of four or five people, go out, talk to people, ask them questions. We learn more by sharing knowledge between ourselves. We learn what's worked for us, what's not worked for us. And also make sure the fact that you're actually looking at new technologies. So, no, Google's not the way I go, because even though there is a lot with Google, it's not the final answer. It's probably the best way of putting it.
And just then, a way to find the websites of those vendors, right?
Yeah, well, actually, I think of all the lines of maybe find me a way to a tech show, and then I can then go to the tech show that way, or what's running on nearby. But yeah, I go out to as many events as I can do, and that's a lot of that's in my own time generally, but I do go through some with work time. But one of the things for me, if you're working in security, you end up living it. So you're always looking for the stuff yourself, and you're always up trying to increase your knowledge. So I'm always trying to go to those kind of things just to learn out what's out there. And if I could use it in my own life, then I will do.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, I mean, obviously, InfoSec Europe is coming up in a couple of weeks at the Excel Centre in London. Lapide will be exhibiting there. So we would love to see you there as well. Come and visit us, grab some notepads and things and a demo.
You're giving away the date this is recorded now by saying that.
am I not meant to? Yeah. So, I think we have quite a long lead time for these shows. But there is a bit of a backlog. So, it'd be great to see you there in any case. And yeah, I mean, those kinds of events are ideal. All the kind of students and people running around just getting free stuff aside, you can have some fantastic conversations.
You make it as though I don't do that. What do you think that pile of stuff in the office was? No, I think we've got to be honest, is the fact that there is certain people who go along to those kind of things and just pick up the stash and walk away. And I've done that myself. But these days, I think you can get too much stash and you actually get to the point where socks, when it's pairs of socks and you have in your cupboard, probably probably can't fit any more in mine. Well, I think for me, even if I took some stash, I'd always go back and have a conversation with the people, because we might find out that they've got the best tool we've ever needed. But exactly. Without speaking to me, you wouldn't know. And where I last worked, I went to DTX, which is another tech event, in Manchester. But I wasn't in Manchester when I went to. And I went round and somebody had a nice cap. I think it was like a fidget spinner kind of thing. And I fancied one of those kind of things. So I said, I'll come back and talk. And obviously, people do that and never come back. I went back. It was nothing to do with my role. It was to do with call center management system. And I was like, I'll speak to you, I'll listen to you. I went back to the office and I just happened to overhear that somebody else was looking at getting one of these products because they're having an issue with their suppliers. And I said, here's a card. Why don't you ever speak to them? And they went and bought it. So even though it's nothing to do with what I was looking at, you still got to go out and find and speak to these guys, because you might find something and actually think, well, that could actually fit us. Because we're not
joining the dots, isn't it?
Yeah, so as a result, I broke down a wall with the people that were buying the product, because suddenly, but well, actually, at least think about us. So again, it's back to that thing.
It's first hand, isn't it? Yeah, word of mouth, and then you're the social proof in your organization as an introduction to that vendor. If it does occur to you and you do overhear that you're in the market for something like that, would something like InfoSec be relevant as a show for GBG itself? Because obviously there is that identity security piece and compliance and fitting in with regulations around KYC. But
isn't a true answer at the moment. I think my opinion is the fact that it is an untapped market for us. Yes, and I think it is an area that we should be focusing on. I think at the moment we deal a lot with the buying side, so buyers of an organization and not the CISO and IT people. Right. And I think it is a way we can get in, especially as what we provide is very much the kind of thing that CISOs are looking for. We already talk trust. In the end, it's a way in. And I've had this conversation internally, the fact that, if I'm speaking to a CISO or even an IT director, I can talk their language. Whereas you end up with Chinese whispers. If I ask for a question from our salespeople, then goes to their procurement people, then goes to their IT people, and then eventually gets to their CISO. Chinese whispers, we could be asking entirely different questions and get a different answer. Sometimes that's the thing we need. And I think that is an untapped market for us. And that there is a potential that, you know, down the line, I could be talking about GBG at a CISO conference. You never know.
Yeah, that's it. That's kind of just where my mind was going there. You know, obviously it's the audience that attends those shows, and, you know, you want to make some money from it, not just spend money on the trade show stand and so on. But, you know, I used to actually work in the trade show organizing space. We used to put on one for restaurant technology. Mm. And, you know, the thing I would always say to prospective clients would be, well, you only need like one McDonald's or one KFC or one of the other, you know, to make it all worthwhile. And exactly. Tenfold, you know, what your spend was just with one client. So obviously, yeah, it's the people walking around that that carry the weight. Otherwise, you know, there wouldn't be any show, would there? Just be vendors.
I've got to admit, after doing that small event internally, our tech day internally, or cyber day internally, I've got so much respect for the people who put on these events, because just trying to run and herd the cats for 2 days, it, you know, in an internal system was quite hard. I wouldn't like to imagine what it's like trying to hunt around 20,000 people to actually attend events.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. There are a lot of moving parts, and it's not just obviously, you know, the 2-3 days of the event. It's the lead up to it. It's all the planning and building the stands, that you, some chaos that goes on in the background where that you don't see when you're just walking around. But we won't go too much into that. I did mention that, you know, the whole Copilot AI thing, and we were talking about this in the office a couple of days ago with the team, because, you know, it's on the tip of everyone's tongues. And it's going to be featuring very heavily at the show. Imagine lots of vendors are going to be saying, you know, how prepared are you for Copilot and rolling it out? Is it something that GBG is already leveraging, or something that you plan to do in the foreseeable future?
We're trialing Copilot as an entity.
Yeah.
Internally within the security, we're trialing it for sometimes writing documents and things like that, and doing graphics is the thing that we've all been doing for part of the preparation for Cyber Day. But regarding the business, it's looking at how it can be a business enabler for us. We're already doing a lot of things that are machine learning, but the concepts that we're using, like large language models with our own kind of design. And there is a impetus by the business to look at how we can leverage and use AI across the business. And that's being led by our CIO. And therefore, it is something we would be doing. But obviously, from my side and the security side, that's what I'm going to see. So we're also looking at what the risks of that as well. So there's both sides we're looking at. How can we deal with somebody using AI to attack us? How can we handle the risk of using AI, the loss of data, etc.? But also, we're looking at how we can leverage AI to increase actual business kind of perspective. So yeah, it's across the board, and we're really
I kind of have to ask the question, because I'm curious, you know, what your take on the challenges and the risks might be. You know, we certainly identified a few, you know, like the insider threat, the data exfiltration, you know, enabling threat actors, because, you know, you compromise one account that has access to Copilot, and then you suddenly have, if that account has open shares and things, you know, dotted around or inappropriate levels of access, you've just got, you know, the keys to the kingdom,
It was actually one of the talks that one of my engineers put on this week, was how he can manipulate a chatbot, an AI chatbot, to be able to then leverage more information. And he actually created a talk on that. And it was quite scary how much data he could do, even that, and leverage or gain access to, even though more and more controls were being added. And it showed the fact that if you don't do it correctly, you can really risk problems. So yeah, it's a process going through the decision to choose the eventual AI scenario. So I'm not going to just say Copilot because it could, you could be using a different tool.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course, it's the kind of the main one that everyone's talking about. So I'm just using it as an example. But yes, obviously, there are other AI tools out there. But yeah, some obviously the advantages, but also the scary things. Yeah, there was this report we were looking at by a Gartner analyst, and he kind of tore Copilot a new one, so to speak, because of all the risks and you know, all the gaps that could be present, and not to mention the hallucination thing, where you know you prompt it something, and then it will invent.
Oh yeah, I did. I actually posted on. I'm over a certain age, so I'm on Facebook. So I put up something on Facebook a short time ago. I set up a team, American football team, Manchester Titans. Obviously based in Manchester, and I set up this a long time ago. And they're now the best team in the UK. No longer involved with them. I moved on. So I asked the question, who set up Manchester Titans within OpenAI, ChatGPT? And it came back with saying, this person created Manchester Titans in 2003 and was the head coach and this, that, and the other. I don't know that person. I was in charge of this the club at that time. I set it up a year before. Yep. I've asked people who were involved in it afterwards, and nobody's heard of it. ChatGPT created its own entity. And that's the issue. We can only learn based on the data that's in there. And if the data in there is flawed, then we kind of get this Chinese whispers again, like I said before, that's actually the truth. And then you'll start having Mandela effect saying that's the truth, even though it's not.
It wants to give an answer, doesn't it? It just wants to please so badly that it wants to give you an answer, even if it's just completely fictional.
It's totally wrong, It's making up things. But I also have the other issue. My worry is more phishing side. And I think that's going to be a big thing that's going to affect it. I find it strange the fact that I have a feeling in a couple of years' time, we're going to be saying to people, saying, if you actually trust an email if it's got spelling mistakes, because it's so easy for somebody to create a fish, but then, you know, AI will make mistakes, Grammarly, but then if it shoves that into another tool like Grammarly, it will then correct that and create it perfect, almost perfect English. So then how do we explain to people that that's potential fish? Because all for years we've been saying to them, a fish is, look out for spelling mistakes, look out for bad syntax, etc. The emails are no longer going to be there. So fishes are going to look more like what we've been saying is a genuine email than what we're actually being targeted with previously.
Yeah, it's removing that human element anyway. You know, I've got Grammarly, but even though something looks grammatically correct or incorrect to Grammarly, I still prefer the way I write it. Right in my own head.
that's the thing. You're going to be looking for that personalization of the email.
Exactly.
And not
the
true... You know, you're no longer looking for spelling mistakes or words written in the wrong way, because the emails are going to come out so precise that you're going to be saying, well, actually, is that a real fish? And I think that's going to be an interesting one, how it's going to change in the fishing scenario because of, you know, AI and its capabilities.
Yeah, true. It's the can of worms, isn't it? The Pandora's box is open and now everyone's scrambling around. I know... a few of our competitors are using the Copilot sort of angle as their main go-to-market now because it's having that like Copilot readiness, especially around access controls in 365. You know, your SharePoint permissions, you're just making sure that you're kind of in a least privileged model, so you're not giving, because there's this thing that Copilot does that actually it will recommend data to you that maybe you didn't even know was there, and it will say, "Oh, have you looked at this?" And you know that can be risky if there's excessive permissions, especially in, you know, your law firms or your accountancies where there's payroll information. Somebody's suddenly got access to everyone's payrolls, and you're like, "Okay, well,
My stock manager was sending through some. He was in a meeting this morning where they were actually discussing how they were able to choose which documents will be affected the most by AI. They're sending screenshots and showing areas like financial information is most likely to be affected by AI. And I think we're going to have to be doing this kind of vetting of our data before we can actually turn on AI, because if not, it will load information we don't really want to share. outside those select people. And you're also looking at the level of data that AI will own. How are you actually able to segment that to make sure you still keep your standard processes? And then if somebody then shares it wider, is there a bigger risk that they could get access to data that you wouldn't want them to have? And I think the control of those user rights is going to become significantly more departmentalized, I think.
You spoke, obviously, that it sounds like there's a big drive in at GBG around, you know, the security awareness and this, you know, seeing as an enabler. How do you go about sort of, you know, apart from the training, do you do like the phishing training or, you know, promoting a mindset within the organization?
Yeah, we do. We do lots of different kinds of things. So we have the usual kind of you must complete training that you have to do for compliance reasons. And we do specific training for certain entities. So if they are people who are working with developers, exactly for that kind of scenario, they've got to do specific training, like OWASP training for PCI. So we've got those compliance kind of scenarios. We do try to provide training to our engineers specifically in the main SOC side. So we upskill all our SOC engineers to provide down specific training. But what I want to do is I'm trying to target more to do with those point-in-time training. So we do phishing training, and we use one of the more famous platforms to do our phishing training, but that is sending the same fish out to everybody. Now, that doesn't really work because my level of catching a fish is probably much higher than somebody else. What I want to do is I'm looking at technologies, and I know one, I won't say it's called, but I know one that's providing what I think it should be, which is providing me bespoke training. And then my next train fish that will come out will be a bit more complex because I already can find that one. So I then increase the levels myself. So it becomes a personalized phishing training.
That's interesting,
And that way, you're then not just saying we're doing phishing because you've got to do phishing. We're doing phishing to upskill people. And I think this tool is the first one I've seen where they're actually doing it, where they focus on the individual instead of being the corporate side.
That's really interesting. It's almost like a spear phishing
approach, but
where
like,
you're leveling up.
I'm going to drop the name in here, and if you don't mind, because I have actually been talking to those guys and helping them a little bit. So the company's called Pistachio, the one I'm looking at. I think it really works, and it's a really nice the way it gives you, or it gives everybody specific training. So instead of being, you know, we're all learning exactly the same thing, everything comes out as needed, and therefore can then target those people that are falling for phishing more instead of being a situation where everything's good because we've only got a couple of people falling for this fish that everybody's seen before. You're looking at it now, aren't you?
I'm trying to find it. Yeah, no, I will. I'm just curious because they'll probably be at InfoSec, so I'll see if I can go and visit.
They're Norwegian.
Okay.
Yeah, it might be. I met them in Manchester at an event. I was talking at Old Trafford, so it could be that they're at InfoSec.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we've got to do. We've got to focus on trying to upskill everybody. And I think phishing doesn't work. The standard phishing doesn't work when we're just sending a templated document to everyone. That doesn't give you any knowledge. It just says these people are always failing and these people are not. But it doesn't tell you whether they're any good to or whether they're picking up.
Yeah, you know, I think there's definitely will be an element, again, of kind of the behavior learning and AI in that kind of training because you can't just have like a one size fits all. Again, like you said, there are different levels of understanding of, you know, what could be a phishing attack and what isn't. Certainly, you know, if it's something that's a lot more targeted and bespoke based on, you know, maybe what's in your emails or what kind of communication you normally see, or even like a location thing. I remember one story when I first started working at Lapide and I remember the name of the company, but they all got hit with this phishing attack because they got sent vouchers to their local coffee shop that they all used to frequent. Yeah. So they all clicked on it. They were like, oh, there's a discount for the coffee.
So last words, we used to do that. We used to do specific things. Generally, we'd do all the standard like monthly kind of send a fish out. But if it came to like Easter, we'd do Easter specific ones. But what with that tool, you could actually get a copy of fishes that I've sent out. You could shove them in the platform and recreate them. But when it came down to Black Friday, oh, it's so easy to get people to click on things. Because you just put up saying, oh, we've got a new offer for this. And people just got, thank you very much. Free bit.
Exactly. Yeah, too good to miss. FOMO.
Yeah, it is. If something's free, people will click on it. You know, it's like that. I can't remember who did the survey. There was something like, how much would it cost for me to get your password? And somebody was selling it for a Mars bar. Did you hear that? Sorry, you stole for a second. Yeah,
selling passwords for a Mars bar. Yeah.
Or any other chocolate brand will go as well.
Sure.
But in that scenario, if we don't train based on the threats that are going out there and what is actually attacking us and the actual individuals, are we actually giving the right thing? And I think large learning models will assist us with that. So we understand what kind of things are attacking us. We understand the infrastructure we understand locations. We understand people's knowledge. And that would be the next, you know, kind of testing of those people to make sure they wouldn't fall for those kind of scenarios. Everybody will eventually just fall for, you know, those kind of, I get something free. How many people pick up USB pen drives when they walk around the tech event? How many people pick up a USB charger when they walk around the tech event? Because it's free. Never thinking the fact that it could have something malicious inside it.
Obviously, you know, at a cybersecurity event, you'd think people would think twice about that sort of thing now, but especially be surprised.
Just watch how many people will go pick up one of those multi-connection cables, not knowing what's in it. And a lot of them have a big like circle or a big shape in it. They could have anything in it. It could be a SIM card in there. It could be anything. And it could be doing something malicious.
Sorry, yeah. There was actually a stand opposite us that had that was doing the, PIN USBs and hard drives. I can't remember the name of the company, but, you know, even like sort of thumbprint biometric access ones. And those are pretty bulletproof in design and security. But they weren't giving them away for free.
No, they won't. I actually really like them, and I actually demonstrated three of those. So I've got the small USB drive, I've got the SSD version, and I've got the old PATA drive. And I think they're wonderful because I used to use those when I was transferring data because I know for well if they were ever stolen, they got 10 passwords. You got 10 attempts at the password, and if you don't get it, the data's encrypted. So they're just a great item.
Great for cold storage for your crypto.
Maybe not. No, if it's SSD, you've got about a year and then it'll be lost.
Yeah, all right. Maybe not then.
Yeah, and then it works on capacitive, so you'll just eventually run out of electricity and then it's gone.
Ah, I see. Yeah, not on the SSD, maybe on the USB one then.
Get on the PATA drive, you might be on it.
That's right, yeah. Just to kind of head to wrapping it up, Lee, in terms of maybe some advice that you give to aspiring cybersecurity professionals. Obviously, you've been around in the industry for a very long time, 20 odd years or so. But I'm at the beginning of my journey, but I'm already in my mid 30s. So don't worry about that. You know, I'll be in my grave before I complete my professional career. But aspiring cybersecurity professionals, what advice would you give to the uni grads? And
I think anybody, one of the biggest things I said this to our people teams today, as an industry, we're always looking for the finished article. And I think there's so many people out there that have got skills that we can use in cyber. And I think what we need to do is we need to assist the people to understand the fact that even if you're doing an entirely different job, those skills will fit inside cyber. So always look at the domains within cyber and look how what you've done in your previous roles will fit. And then focus on that. Then find which part of cyber you really like and enhance those knowledge. For that kind of scenario, it'll help you on the first step into cyber. So previous role, I've recruited people who worked in networking infrastructure. I've recruited people who worked for the police in digital forensics. And that person said to me, I've never worked in cyber. And it's like, you're working in forensics. It's a cyber this is type of kind of, you know, the domain. We need to have your knowledge, your experience. You're working cyber already, even though you're not doing a technical cyber role, you're doing a cyber discipline. So yeah. For anybody, first thing, get out there, go out and talk to people, share, get knowledge off them. Go to things like B-sides. If you're new to the industry, look for things like B-sides or Steel Con or the equivalent. Look for your local community chapters. Look on Eventbrite for any kind of events that are running. They'll help you more and they'll give you knowledge in cyber. And then get out and find something you really like, because there's too many jobs out there that are not being filmed because we're just going, we want to finish the article. And I think there's so much talent from people who could do a great job in cyber. Get out and get it. But my big worry is the fact that cyber is going to be hit by all the people who are working in development who are going to be displaced by AI. So I'm bringing it back to your AI scenario. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be doing coding that's going to be really easy for computers to go, here's a bit of coding. So we're going to be paying a lot of money to get people who are doing QA on that code. And therefore, all those developers will be looking for new jobs. So if they are, the same goes for you guys. If you're looking, trying to find a job, get out, learn. If you're trying to progress through the ranks, you need to stop talking technical. You need to start talking business language. Start talking risk, because in the end, that's where you move on. You move on being able to talk the business language, and business will always be, the risk is always important to the business. So when you try to get into it, talk technical, find the bit you want, but then if you're moving on, start moving more to a risk-based kind of response to
business. Yeah, towards that leadership and being able to sort of straddle that technical and the board level.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I've fallen really lucky this role, because my CISO is actually from risk. So as a result, I can still stay on the techie side, still enjoy my techie side, but still I'm, you know, let him do a lot of the talking for the risk side. So I think I've got the perfect scenario here for me.
Brilliant. Yeah. No. Well. That's a really good bit of advice. Yeah. Certainly lean into that curiosity piece. And yeah, we've had so many guests on the show from a military background. You mentioned the police, but certainly going in from comms and signalers, and then going into cybersecurity, it seems like a natural kind of progression after the military.
And let's get it right. It's not just cyber out there. There's going to be a lot more jobs for InfoSec, full stop. If we look at things like DORA that's coming in, DORA is going to really increase the need for security professionals across the board. DORA is going to really increase the number of like requirements penetration testing, especially if you're working with banks and et cetera. And that means there's going to be a lot more physical tests. There's going to be a lot more social engineering tests. There's going to be a lot more kind of, I don't know, you know, it's going to be more targeted kind of attacks. And I think even disciplines for those people who worked in the army, they will bring potentially the physical kind of penetration test knowledge that other people wouldn't have. So, you know, there's multiple routes into InfoSec as well now coming up.
And of course, I think there's all the management systems and operational technology and so on. I've just been listening to called Sandworm on my Audible about the NotPetya attack and how that kind of transpired. It's all quite interesting.
Which was an awesome other talk that we did. So my CIO did a talk on ransomware. Would you pay it? Mm-hmm. And the final question that we put in would be, at what point would you go from being, I'm not willing to pay? And it was interesting to see people's responses, because we were saying things like, would you pay $1 million to deal with a ransomware attack? And people were, some people were going, no, and other ones were like, well, what about if it's 50,000, would you pay? And you can see people just going, I might pay, I might not do. And it's an interesting
thing. Isn't it like how much is it going to cost you in downtime? Is it, if it's better to pay it when?
Oh, I think my internet's just gone terrible when. Sorry, I didn't hear them, Vitaly.
How much it'll cost you in downtime?
Yeah, but this was not to specific managers. This was just giving the idea.
If you lost your data, people
are asking it and answering it on their own scenario. Would you pay 25 quid to get back to your personal photographs that you've had of your kids all your lives? you know, people probably would do. But if I said it's £1,000, suddenly it gets a bit more complex.
Well, I dropped a whole glass of wine on my old MacBook, and I've got a corrupt SSD with lots of, you know, videos and photographs and things like that. It's a lot harder than, you know, to recover from that than it is from a, you know, an old spinning style hard drive. And it costs.
I remember what I just said here about your capacitor. You need to make sure you keep charging that every so often.
Yeah, don't spill wine on your keyboard.
Yeah. If you do, throw rice at it.
That's it. It was during COVID. We were in Portugal, and I think we were buying box wine at this point. So we'd had too many. But on that note, thank you very much, Lee. I hope you have a fantastic long weekend.
Yep.
And you too. Thank you very much for joining us. And I'm sure we'll cross paths in the future at one of the events. If you see a Lapide stand, make sure you come say hi.
It might be in for a second. You never know.
You never know. Yeah.
Right, awesome. Nice to meet you.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.